Welcome back to On the Wine Road here on KSRO. I'm Jeff Davis. My wife and I have been fans of Peterson Winery for a while now. They're in the Timbercrest Farms group of wineries in Dry Creek Valley, along with Papa Pietro Perry, Kokomo Vineyard, Amphora, and Family Wineries Cooperative. You can park your car and spend the whole afternoon in that one spot. Since the early years, after starting as a vineyard worker and quickly becoming a vineyard manager, Fred Peterson started making wine, adding enology to his viticulture credentials. You'll like him. He's forthcoming and can be quite colorful. Some editing may be needed. I started by asking him where he began in the business.
For my first job after graduating with a degree at UC Davis, my first job was down in Monterey County for Palmasan, but after about a year, I realized I couldn't work for a large corporation, and I couldn't work for a company whose wines I couldn't drink. And I was fortunate enough to hear of a job opening at Mount Eden, applied. I was hired as vineyard manager and assistant winemaker. And then the following year, the winemaker moved on, and Dick Graff founded Modern Day Chalon, was our consulting winemaker, and he asked me if I wanted to work into being the winemaker, which was a great opportunity. I tell people, though my degree, Jeff, is in viticulture, I got into the wine business because I loved wine, not because I necessarily wanted to be a farmer. And I'd like to think I was ahead of my time, but in fact, my degree at Davis, the focus was viticulture, plant science, because you can get a degree in viticulture and take less chemistry. And I didn't like chemistry. So anyhow, I'd like to think I was ahead of my time, but really I was just following my own desire not to have to study more organic chemistry. You learn from working with people who know what they're doing. It's basically an apprenticeship, and the university training teaches you the science. You know, it gives you hopefully an inquisitive mind, but winemaking, and to a large extent, even though you have to know the science to consistently make good wine or great wine, certainly, and grow the grapes necessary to do that, it's a craft, not more than a science.
And you were growing grapes and managing vineyards and winemaking about at the same time.
Yes, yeah. Like I said, my job for Palmasan was as a vineyard supervisor, but I had worked at Borgetto Winery down outside of Santa Cruz. Before I went back to Davis, I traveled to New Zealand, Australia, worked in a winery in New Zealand, came back to California and worked to harvest as a racker and blender, it was called, at Charles Krug Winery. So I had experience in both ends.
That's a wonderful experience. Then you came up here to Dry Creek Valley, and I heard you had some great success with your plantings here.
Well, I'd like to think so. My problem was, going back to the business side, I think vineyards with a view grow better grapes. And by that, I mean the valley floor, where you can get bigger yields, you don't get the same quality. So I had an eye for vineyards. And Bradford Mountain, our first vineyard and where I live, I actually wasn't involved in the selection of that property. It was my partner, Bill Hambrecht, who purchased the property. I was introduced to him through the Chalon connection. I had fallen in love with the Dry Creek Valley. My first visit here was in 1971, but really connected when I was at Davis. I had friends who got a couple of jobs, different jobs over here, and would come visit, and just thought, if I ever have the opportunity to grow grapes, live, and make wine in Dry Creek, that would be a wonderful thing, and it happened, so that's why I'm here.
And how did you finally get to the point where you wanted to transition into running your own business?
It was sort of, going from the frying pan into the fire, so to speak. I won't bore you with too much detail, Jeff, but the Little Red Barn that's painted behind you was the original winery on the property. We called the Norton Ranch, which is now owned by Ridge. In 1984, we had plans for an incredible winery on the property. Doug Nall was hired as the original winemaker. I was the GM and vineyard guy. But the winery didn't happen. The financial markets and the wine business seemed to be tied together, and the wine business was going into the toilet, if you will, and the financial business that my partner Bill Hambrick was involved in was hitting some rocky shoals. So that project got put on hold. Talked Bill into loaning Doug Nall enough money to convert the Red Barn to a winery. And then in 1987, Doug realized that trying to make a living from his small production back in the late 80s was really a challenge, and he was offered the winemaker position at Kivera with the opportunity to make the Nall wines there. So he jumped on that. I talked Bill Hambrick into letting me buy Doug's winemaking equipment and the lab stuff, and so 1987. So I backed into it is the short answer to a long-winded ramble. So 1987, we were a bonded winery. It was Hambrick Vineyards. I got small print on the label, Peterson Winery. So it wasn't really initially a business. It was more, my excuse was to produce wines that allowed us to showcase the grapes we grew, because by 1987, the vineyard I planted on Bradford Mountain, the mostly Cabernet with some Cabernet Franc, Petit Verdot, Merlot, was starting to come into production. So we had all these grapes, and my excuse, and that's really what it was we could use these wines as calling cards to hopefully get a better price for the fruit that we were starting to harvest in large quantities.
So it was more for commercial purposes, business to business, rather than for the public.
It was, yeah. And most of the wine originally, through Bill's company, Hambrick and Quist, most of the wine he actually gave away as kind of to clients and such. So initially, I didn't have to make any money at it, which is because I'm good at that. And then it evolved in the early 90s. The financial guy for Belvedere and worked with the vineyard business side said, well, gee, Fred, we could be selling these grapes, and yet you're turning it into wine and we're losing income. And my, I said, well, if I sell enough wine to at least cover all the cost, is that okay with you? And that was the agreement. So that's when, I think it was 92, but don't hold me to it, Jeff, I started going out and finding accounts, restaurants and retail shops to buy our wine. But it was still a sidelight. And then in 95, Hambrick went in a direction with Belvedere and his winery investments. I didn't want to go down that path, and he ended up selling me a majority interest in the winery. So 95, 87 is the first year, our birth, but 95 was the year I jokingly say I went from the frying pan into the fire.
Did your name get bigger on the label?
My name, yes. When I considered my options, I said, well, I'll see my name in the marquee, and you know, if we don't succeed, I'll at least I'll have a lot of good wine to drink. So that's, yes.
I've heard that many times from winemakers when looking back to the early days. They had plenty of wine to drink. We'll hear more of Fred's tales of the winery's growth and meet his daughter Emily as On the Wine Road continues. This is 1350 AM and 103.5 FM KSRO. I'm Jeff Davis, and we are on the wine road. I'm talking with Fred Peterson of Peterson Winery. You may recall seeing the old Peterson Winery barn on Lytton Springs in Dry Creek, which was before my time here. So I asked him when he made the move to the Timbercrest Farms property.
We moved to what I refer to as our large red barn-like structure after the 2005 vintage. So shortly after Peterson Winery became my main focus, Hambrick sold the vineyard on Lytton Springs to Ridge, which came as a bit of a surprise, but actually it worked out great because I had worked from 85 to 90. I had spent a few days a month managing Ridge Montebello Vineyards, had continued to do some consulting with them. So they hired me. They became my landlord and hired me to continue to consult and help manage the vineyard. And then in 2005, literally the building was falling down around us. we needed to make a little bit more wine. My son Jamie had come on board in 2002, and I realized that making, even though it was a great, people always ask, do you miss the Little Red Barn? And I say I miss it intensely, especially when we're having parties. But as far as making wine, it was kind of a joke. As I said, we had two floor drains in the fermentation room. The barrel cellar, the main barrel cellar, was wooden floor. All the barrels had to be taken outside, the lees dump, rinsed, brought back, stacked by hand. So watching Jamie do all this, I said, this place is absurd. And in order for him to be able to have some sort of living, 4,000 cases wouldn't cut it, and we needed to grow production. So 2006 was the first vintage here at Timbercrest. And the following year, we opened our tasting. Oh, and that was the other thing at the old location. Other than special events, we weren't permitted to have tastings. And here we are at what I call the wine mall of Timbercrest Farms.
Yeah, the tasting room definitely helps you rise to the next level. You know, it's hard to do that without it. And as you said, you definitely have the old barn facade here, so you kind of maintain that appearance.
Yeah, it's a... It, for us, as Emily and I have been discussing recently, it's both a blessing and a curse, because we do see a lot more people up here. But the key for any winery is making the connection to people who are going to appreciate what you do, and then, of course, buy it, because without selling it, you can't stay in business. So we see a lot more people here. The challenge is to connect. So the bigger events, like barrel tasting, which I think this will be the last year we do it for a while, because it's just
it's crazy.
Yeah. And I have enough personal craziness that dealing with large crowds freaks me out, shall we say.
But I did read that one of your happy surprises about getting into this business was the opportunity to meet so many people, and you really enjoyed getting out and talking with and seeing people face to face and making new friends.
Yeah, one-on-one or small groups. And, you know, it's nice. We do sell our wine in about 14 states outside of California. And doing it long enough, I don't like to travel as much as I did when I was younger. But what I do like is when you go places and people are glad to see you, they appreciate what you do, and they continue to buy your wine. That part's nice, that, you know, we're not curing cancer or creating world peace, but I take satisfaction in, you know, providing something that reflects the beauty of where we grow and make the wine and makes people happy. I mean, that's my tiny little satisfaction, Jeff.
Well, you know, wine can be part of a peaceful resolution, you know, between people, countries, what have you. I've been curious, what inspired you to use the hand-drawn wildlife images on your label? They look like a throwback to a National Wildlife magazine or something. You have an owl, deer, goat, raccoon, mountain lion, and I think I saw a porcupine, too. It made me wonder if you're an avid hunter.
No, the joke up on Bradford Mountain, of course, to keep the deer out, which would devastate. We have to put up a fence, and the joke is... that as long as the wildlife stay on their side of the fence, they're okay. When they come inside, whether it's pig or the occasional deer, which thankfully doesn't happen, then they can end up in my freezer. But the short answer is our original label had a similar motif. Peterson up on top, the little red barn in a box, and the vineyard in the varietal, but they were very... They work great on a restaurant table, but in terms of retail, they were almost too understated. And making as many wines as we produce, the challenge was, how do you give each of the wines an identity of its own? And Chris Blum, who's the designer artist who we work with, who came up with that strategy, is an old friend, and he's been here in Healdsburg forever. I went to Chris and I said, here's my dilemma. I like my label. I paid a designer a lot of money to design it, but all our red wines look the same. What solution
could you come up with to give each its own personality or identity? So Chris came up with the different animals, and then we morphed it into different colors. And
he does a fantastic job. I mean, they look like they're out of a magazine. I mean, they're very well drawn.
Yeah, and he actually, I mean, although Chris is an artist, he's not a fine artist. So he finds old woodblock prints and basically absconds with them. So he doesn't actually draw those. Okay. As Chris is fond of saying, as long as it's in public domain, we'll rip it off and use it.
Sure. Well, I saw, I had to revisit your website. I've certainly seen the bottles here in your tasting room, but I went back to see all the different animals you have on the website. And while I was there, Emily, you know, when I went to the Meet Our Staff page, you're not on there. Are you like the black sheep of the family?
We actually have another brother who would take that title. But
and he's not on there either, is he?
He's not, no. I'm a fairly new addition to the staff family. I've been on board for about 2 years, but really only full-time in the capacity I am now for about a year. And as I mentioned, we're going through a new website, so that I'll definitely be a face on there.
Make sure your face gets,
yes,
on that one.
It's hopefully we'll sell more wine. No.
Of course.
So yeah, I'm very much involved in all the day-to-day operations with events, marketing, sales, and starting to learn some of the outside sales, as my dad's done for the last 30 years, of getting the name out there to the people that hopefully come to the winery and visit us and love our wine. So.
Well, you certainly have the face for that. And that's where we met, at the Zap Zinfandel event, mm-hmm, Zinfest, back in February.
Yep, I'm definitely taking over doing all those sorts of events for both my dad and my brother. I have more energy, a little bit younger, but also just excited. Come from a long line of restaurant management serving, so okay, I'm trained for it.
Right. And you like meeting people as well?
Yeah, most people.
And you're honest.
Yes, I have that trait as well.
Emily Peterson. Since our interview, they have completed their new website, and yes, she is there now, getting the credit she deserves. I'll wrap up with Fred of Peterson Winery when On the Wine Road continues. Welcome back to On the Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis. Thanks again to my sponsors, Bank of Marin in Petaluma, Santa Rosa, Sonoma, and coming soon to Healdsburg, and Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa, a family-owned business since 1982 on the Corbiato Row, and mbofsantarosa.com. While doing my research on Peterson Winery, I discovered that Fred's wife, Kathleen, owns the downtown bakery and creamery in Healdsburg. I asked him who was the first to become the entrepreneur.
It happened about the same time. She just celebrating, I guess this year, her 30th year. And you have to forgive me, Jeff, my memory isn't. I joke, our wines get better. My memory has proven not to. So she opened the bakery in the plaza in 1987. And that was the first year of Peterson Winery. So I guess it's a beautiful thing. She has her business. We have our business. If she wants my advice or opinion, I give it. Otherwise, I shut up.
And you mentioned your son's working with you now, and it seems like since he's come on, you're getting more and more varietals on your list, and you have quite an extensive list of varietals that you sell, and most taste just wonderful, and I'm happy to see that you also added a Super Tuscan. What's your favorite overall, or can you even pick one?
Well, the cliched answer, Jeff, is it's like choosing among your children, you know. It depends what they did to piss you off lately. But I drink a lot more Zinfandel than I do the more intense mountain wines. And it's not that you have to analyze Cabernet to appreciate it, but I like Cabernets that have a little bit of age. And they're both because of the complexity and the tannins. You do have to give them a little bit more thought to really appreciate what's in them, whereas good Zinfandel is just totally immediate gratification. You don't have to think about it at all.
Fred Peterson of Dry Creek Valley's Peterson Winery. See their long list of varietals at petersonwinery.com. It was an enjoyable morning hanging out with Fred and Emily outside their tasting room. Well, I have quickly run out of time. Find my past shows on iTunes at On the Wine Road Podcast and other podcast platforms and onthewineroad.com. And see my travels on Facebook at On the Wine Road. Stay tuned for Grape Encounters with David Wilson. You're invited to join me next Saturday for another adventure on the Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis.